As adult children of aging parents, there's a lot on our plate, and a lot of that is about planning for what's coming next. Lots of things are coming down the pike for us. Sometimes things go according to plan, and sometimes life throws some curveballs. Today, I'm speaking with a good friend and a colleague who is someone who spends a lot of time working with seniors and helping them move and downsize and transition and think about what comes next and helping families do that. And then life turned a little bit on its ear for her, and she found herself in a situation with her own family that she hadn't planned for. Today, we're going to talk about how even the professionals get it wrong sometimes, and we're going to normalize that, but also hopefully inspire people to be thinking a little differently about planning for the future. Welcome to Surfing the Quicksand. One of the things that many of us in this sandwich generation or adult child of aging parents will face is eventually we're working through some difficult phases with our parents. It might be about where they're living, how they're living, their health, their planning for their final days, and planning for what comes after they pass away. There are so many conversations and decisions and projects that can happen long before we get there, and many of them happen just in time, and sometimes we don't make that deadline. Today, I'm talking with somebody who's going to bring her professional experience and her personal experience to that kind of journey. She's a senior move manager and certified professional organizer, and she's been doing this for 20 years in her profession, helping people downsize and move and plan for what comes next. But in this past year, she faced her own journey with her mother, who got a diagnosis kind of out of nowhere that ended up accelerating conversations and difficult moves almost without any preparation. We're going to talk about her experience and how her personal experience is informing her professional work with her clients, and how her professional work set her up for some of the successes on the personal side. Please welcome my very dear friend and frolic, my friend plus colleague from the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals, NAPO, Wendy Puglio.
Thanks so much for having me. I am really, really honored to be here and excited to talk about this topic.
I know that since we know each other very well, we've been able to have this conversation for a long time, both as friends, but also as colleagues, and how you deal with things as an organizer, a move manager, how I deal with things as an organizer, thinking about how we relate to our clients when we're going through all aspects of journeys, especially journeys with transition like this. I want to start by talking a little bit about the kind of work you do. I don't do moves, right? You know that I gloriously say I don't do move management. It's not something I like. It's not something I want to build a business around. You, however, have really embraced it. So can you start by explaining to people kind of the difference between organizing and move management?
Sure. I think that we're excellent move managers, by the way, because we come from a background of organizing and we bring that client interaction skill set and really the foundations of organizing to our work in helping people that are relocating and transitioning. So they go hand in hand, is kind of my point. But for those who don't know what a move manager is, because I do spend a lot of time explaining what that is, think of us as kind of the project manager, quarterback of someone's move. Ideally, we're starting with people long before they move in helping them review their belongings, decide what they're going to take with them to their new space. Sometimes it's a downsize, sometimes it's not. But in any case, it's an opportunity to kind of review what you have and what's going to serve you moving forward. And then we handle logistics around your relocation. So we can pack, we can help you find movers, we can oversee the movers, floor planning, space planning, complicated logistics around multiple locations and destinations. unpacking and settling you in, kind of anything that relates to your move. And we do that for all kinds of clients, but seniors in particular, older adults are certainly a growing number of our clients and a big part of our business.
You said, or I introduced you as somebody who I think you're a certified senior move management manager.
Right.
Is that the right
Yeah.
term?
That is.
What does that mean to be a senior move manager as opposed to just an anybody move manager?
Well, I think when we're working with our older adult clients, our senior clients, there's a lot more patience and emotional intelligence and people management skills that come into play, because not only are we working with a population that maybe needs a little bit more handholding through a process, but often there are family members and other dynamics at play. And so I think that that credential comes with some really important learning and professional development, which I'm a big proponent of, and just really kind of staying on top of our game all the time.
I imagine as a senior move manager, it's not always the seniors who are reaching out to you for help.
Right.
Tell me about
It's
that.
Yeah, it's often a family member, somebody in our position, right? They're seeing perhaps an older loved one that is needing to relocate, downsize, to live closer to family. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're moving into a senior community. It could be that they're going to buy a condo and move closer to the grandchildren. But oftentimes we will get calls from family members, perhaps a elder advocate or a senior care manager, or even close friends of sometimes of our clients are the ones that are calling us. And that creates a complicated client relationship because our client ultimately is the person who's in transition, the person who's moving. That's the person we're most responsible to. But there's often a lot of other players in the mix and a lot of logistics to kind of think through and conversations to have around that.
I've been in situations, again, not move management, but situations where it is someone else who has called or someone else who is paying. I call them my client sponsors, right? And
Sure.
I have two contracts when I work with people, right? One is for my client, the person whose life we're dealing with, and the other is the person who's paying. And I call it a sponsor agreement. And I talk to them about boundaries and roles and what I'm sharing and who gets to drive the timetable, right? Sometimes when you're talking to seniors around, hey, listen, they need to move within a year, or we're on some kind of structured journey here. The idea of, well, hey, are you working fast enough? Is mom still talking about her craft room? We really need her focus on the kitchen. And it's really interesting to kind of navigate through those dynamics. I think about it at myself too, right? Our generation, or the adult child, is often coming at it from, this is a logistical problem to solve.
Sure.
And it's not often that it's part of maybe what the senior thinks of it as. And if it is, it's certainly not the top thing they think of it as. And they are processing emotionally, whereas the adult child is like, we're on the clock. How much money is this costing? We got to be out of the house by a certain point of time. Very logistics driven. Tell me about
Well,
that
and I
experience
think
for you.
100%. And I think there's varying degrees of motivation for the adult child that's calling, right? That sometimes those relationships are super healthy and supportive, and sometimes not so much. And that can go both ways. And it is not my job to solve that or really truly understand it. Ultimately, I may be sort of answering to or communicating with multiple people, but the client, my top priority is always going to be the person that is actually moving. And that's a tough conversation to have. And I always kind of do that right at the get-go, so that everybody understands. And one thing about me is I'm very transparent and a straight shooter. And so I will just kind of lay that out there at the beginning. And I love, but I'm going to steal your idea of a different contract for the client sponsor. Love that term.
Oh,
It's great.
good. And I think for me, starting a business, and I've only compared to you, I've only been in business 13 years, right? So
Absolutely.
A lot of lessons I learned early on when you're running a business is you learn a lesson through, the hard way, right? Like, oh, I wish I had done something differently. So that was an example of something like, oh, I had somebody who really considered themselves, I'm the one who pays, so I'm the one who deserves the update and just gets to set the pace. I was like, oh, this is where I learned differently. And I said, what do I need to protect in a contract? The only thing I need to make sure the sponsor does is they know their role and they know when they need to pay me and what happens if they don't. The client agreement is also really discusses a lot of things, like what are our rules of engagement? What if I think this is a situation that's unsafe? What if I think we're in a space where maybe you're kind of backtracking around some of our decisions? How are we setting our working relationship? But that one then doesn't mention anything about money, and it just helps make kind of this three-way conversation brighter.
Well, and I think that's so important. And by the way, if someone has a power of attorney, if you're fully on as a caregiver from a legal perspective, we're having a different conversation, perhaps, in that regard, than you're just a concerned just, I don't mean to say just,
No,
but
no.
you are a concerned adult child who, by all rights, should be stepping in to help facilitate this. But from a paperwork perspective, maybe you don't have those authorizations in place, which is, I think, what we're going to talk about tonight. But I think, I think just getting real clear about that at the beginning of any relationship is what someone should be looking for when they're looking to engage with, a service like mine.
Yeah. And I do think the idea of engaging with a service like yours, I do a lot of speaking, and of course everyone's like, can I hire you? Or, and we always have, people are always like, wait, you're a resource I could hire. And one of the things that I hear from people a lot is, I can't do this with my mother, right? I can't be the person in the room who's driving this process because I live too far away, or that's not the relationship we have, or I'm afraid it's going to damage our relationship, or whatever those are. And so often I hear when I bring a third party into it, my dad listens to that person. They don't listen to me, right? There's so much of that authority and credibility that can come in by saying, Dad, I talked to Wendy at Wendy Bulio Consulting, and this is what she's been doing for decades. And she has a team, and they know exactly what they're doing because they do this all the time. And parents tend to respond really well to that and say, sounds good, I'll talk to her.
Well, we can be the neutral, what I like to say is we're the neutral third party. We don't have any skin in the game about what someone's taking with them or, any of the baggage, or we're not bringing a lifetime of family dynamics into the mix in the conversation. So we can be that authority, we can be that expert. But oftentimes, we're handling multiple and different objectives or priorities for folks, and we're having to help our clients kind of compromise and come to a place where it can work for everyone. And that is so much of kind of what I said at the very beginning, like that client interaction stuff that we bring to the table that other people maybe aren't as skilled at, comes into play all the time.
I think I want to transition a little bit to your personal story, but where we go through it, I think that lens that we talked about at the top of the call around kind of what was your exp before you went through this personally, maybe how you thought things would go and
Oh,
how your personal
sure.
experience then shifted that.
I mean, here's what I will say, right? I learn every day. Maybe I've been at this for 20 years, but every client teaches me something. And I think I would answer that question by saying, super easy for me to say, hey, you got to have these important conversations with your parents and get critical paperwork in order. Where's the power of attorney? Where's the medical healthcare proxy? Is there a will? Are things buttoned up? Whether I'm speaking to a client about that or their family member, very easy for me to get on a soapbox and talk about how important that is. And yet, it's a very difficult nut to crack, especially because you're asking someone to kind of face their own mortality, and get ahead of it in a way that is very legal and cold feeling, and cut and dry, you know, never mind the stuff, right? There's also sort of the emotional attachment that people have to their things that they really want to hand down. And, you know, as a practitioner, it's easy for me to kind of say, well, these are best practices, right? Here's what we should be doing. And I think my journey this year has really taught me a lot about what it's like to really be in that moment and what, you know, how to navigate that effectively or not effectively in my case, and then deal with the consequences.
Yeah, and here are the things, and I were that the concept of consequences, right? Even when things were planned excellently,
Sure.
there are going to be
Plane was going to
unintended.
crash anyway.
Yeah, there are often unintended consequences, or the listen, we got it 90%, and we're just going to deal with the other 10%, and sometimes the 10% lands heavy, and so. One of the things I want to make sure people hear from our conversation is you and I are, we are professionals. We are highly educated in the space. We focus a ton on these kinds of conversations and these kinds of client situations. And we can point to spots in our own life where we're saying, nope, that's not working.
Didn't happen, and here's how to work around it, or here's what we're going to do instead, or here's what the game plan is now. Yeah. I
Okay,
think it's
so.
just, you know, I think I would just want to say to people, you know, if we leave this conversation, and you know, we can get to this, but if we leave this conversation knowing that it's normal, that everyone struggles, you know, with these, no one has this completely, unless maybe you're an estate attorney, no one has this completely buttoned up and clean. It's just, you know, we work towards perfection, but we're not perfectionists.
And I would bet there are estate attorneys that still struggle with some aspect of this too.
Sure. Yeah.
No, knowing some estate attorneys. Okay, so take us through your personal story that's
Sure.
informed where you are today.
Yeah. So it's been about 4 months, lost my mom about 4 months ago. My parents were really young when I was born. They were 20 and 21 when I was born. So I've always had kind of the youngest, healthiest parents, the ones that everyone sort of couldn't believe were actually my parents, because they, and not only were they always young, but they always presented young as well. So I was, you know, kind of living in this bubble of like, all right, mom and dad are in their early 70s. You know, we've got a decade or so before we start to need to start having any kind of difficult conversations, right? Like very active, very involved, independent, didn't require, you know, any kind of support really. I mean, you know, starting to show some signs of aging, obviously, but by and large, you know, still doing all the things that they'd always done. And so as much as I say to people, it's never too early to get started on these conversations, we just didn't do it. And then my mom, last Christmas, was diagnosed with lung cancer. And it, you know, sucked the air out of the room. We knew it was a terminal diagnosis. But even then, I think we thought we had a certain amount of time, you know, maybe 9 months or a year. And so as this year unfolded, even the early part of this year, first January, February, March, we were together, but not still not kind of touching those big conversations around, hey mom, you know, does Ed know how to, my stepdad, does he know how to like go online and pay the bills? Where do you keep XYZ? Do you have your medical healthcare proxy in place? So, you know, fast forward to maybe April timeframe, and I was like, you know, I really feel like we need to kind of move some of this forward. And I went online and found all the documentation. It's just, even specifically just around her kind of end of life wishes, what she wanted, wanting to have that documented. And she was debating at the time, who did she want to appoint? Was it going to be my stepdad? Did she want to make a change there? And she just kind of stalled out. And I can respect it because nobody wants to do that. And she's really was staring down a terminal illness. And it was almost like giving up hope on the possible effectiveness of her treatment by addressing it and doing this paperwork. And it was hard to say, well, this is just in case, mom, because it was no longer just in case. It was actually like a real scenario that was going to be coming. And she just shut down entirely about it. And, I, as a organizer and someone who's been in a caretaking role for her most of my life, I was like, how hard do I push on this? Because on some level, it's a gift you can give your family by getting this stuff in order, right? It's going to make things a little bit easier for us. But I kind of had to give her that space to get, I at the time, I was like, she'll do it when she's ready. And then she declined very quickly, into like June, and July. She was in hospice pretty quickly. And it came down to that paperwork never got done. We didn't need it because we all kind of knew she wanted hospice care and she wanted that at home. So she kind of verbally expressed what she wanted. But there was a point in time where my stepdad turned to me and said, "Do you know what your mom's wishes are?" And I was like aghast that they hadn't had this conversation even, or that he hadn't absorbed it. And so that was just one piece of it. Of course, there's a million other things that have kind of been little surprises since she's passed. Things like she did all the bill paying online, and my stepdad, not the most computer savvy individual. And they shared a login for Bank of America, or he started using her Bank of America login. But then, so she'd loaded in all the bill payees on there, and we had to show him how to do it. And then when he sent the death certificate in, they closed her username and sent him his own, and he lost all of it, right? So every little thing that's been happening has been kind of pulling the rug out from under us. And it's created a lot of logistical challenges on top of grieving for the past few months. And it's, things that I would have advised clients to do and get in order, but couldn't quite get that motivation going for them.
Well, thank you. Thank you
Yeah.
for sharing that. And I want to kind of go back to that point around it's really hard to have that conversation because it feels like you're giving up. And whether
Yeah.
it's the person who is facing their own mortality or the family member or loved ones who are like, "Mom, you got this. No, you're going to beat this. Of course, you're going to go through treatments and things are going to come out of it." It can feel like such an extraordinary betrayal to speak to anything other than a positive outcome and getting ducks in a row, while it's an absolutely positive thing to do for whatever comes next, just feels like, "Mom, I love you, but like, hey, just in case, could you?"
Yeah.
You know, and how hard that is.
It was, and it, the other difficult thing was, I think, instead of just spending time, our conversations, she'd be like, oh, let me pull out. She wanted to download like a lifetime worth of information about all her things to us. And I wasn't really absorbing it all, to be fair, right? She was like, oh, here's this box from your grandmother, and here's some, I don't remember what she said about whose ring is whose and whatever. Ultimately, it doesn't matter because it's stuff and I'm not that attached to the things, but she was trying to share with me the importance of certain items, and I just couldn't take it all in at that moment. And it would have been good if we'd done that years ago. Or written it down or documented it so that she didn't feel like she had to spend our time doing that. Like, let me make sure she knows, whatever, XYZ about this item. Yeah. So it's because I was shutting, I was not in a place where I really wanted to hear about pottery collection. I didn't care about that right now.
Right.
But
So
now I've got this pottery collection. I'm like, ugh,
I know nothing about this
about
pottery
this?
collection.
Right. I mean, whatever. I do know. But, the point being, there was a lot of stuff I couldn't really take in at that time.
I'm thinking about a family that I worked with, the one of the adult children had been a client of mine, and they brought me in to work with their mother, who was not facing imminent death, but like, in their probably late 70s at the time. And I remember we were going through mom's bedroom and came across a last rites kit. So it was a very Catholic family, and it was a last rites kit and something that would happen at the time of somebody's death. And there had been other family members who had passed away in this house. It was a long generationally owned house. And I remember it came out, and I said, so like I recognized it was an important moment where I could open up this conversation. I said, do you have intentions of this being used when it's your time? And I remember the client who brought me in was like, oh no, we don't have to talk about that. No, just felt it again, it felt uncomfortable. It kind of felt icky and moving on. And mom was like, yeah, actually, I do. I would like that. And I said, great. Where should we keep it so that everybody knows where it is at that time? Right. So even in when we weren't facing an imminent kind of
Right.
death conversation, it still felt uncomfortable. Like, no, my mom's gonna be here forever. We don't need to have this conversation. But I really saw in the mother like the desire to make sure this was taken care of and that
Yeah.
everybody knew about it.
Yeah, I think my husband's grandmother was sort of a notorious woman, and she would always say, death is a part of life and you might as well be prepared for it. And she very pragmatically and clearly let him know what her wishes were, where everything was. That what a gift that is. Like it was, you'd sort of be like, Nana, we don't have to do that. But I think we all need to be more open to that conversation and not have it have such a stigma to it. Because the best time to do it is when there isn't something imminent, because it can be sort of a, you can separate yourself from the reality of it and say, well, that's a someday thing, or just in case we're not facing that right now, but like let's do it so that we know it's all set. And then we don't have to have that conversation when we know we have 6 months or less together, because we know it's all set and we can focus on meaningful things that we want to do and talk about during that time and not be scrambling. Or not doing it at all and having a lot of pieces to pick up afterwards. So that's really amazing that you seize that moment and that opportunity. And that would be what I would encourage everyone to do, regardless of your age, quite frankly. None of us are guaranteed another day. Make sure your loved ones know what your wishes are and have those tough conversations early and often, and things change. And by the way, I'm blessed with siblings that I get along with, and we're all on the same page and we have a great dynamic. But how many times have we worked with families where that's not the case? And making sure everybody understands and is on the same page. When I do estate clean out work and there's any kind of family contention in play, that makes it challenging, right? Again, then I go back to my sort of straight shooter, very transparent, calming, but direct, communication style, which I'll be putting into practice this holiday season when my dad and my stepmom come, who are young and healthy. But we're going to be having a chat around, they don't know this, maybe they will when they listen. We're going to be having a chat around, okay, I just went through this with mom. What do we have in place for you? Like, what do I need to know? Because let's have that conversation now so that I'm prepared and, kind of do that when it's not mission critical.
One of the things that I think has been a theme in a few of the episodes that I've recorded is the great gift, which is the cautionary tale of what someone else's experience that we can look and say, we don't want that from them for ourselves. And even in your situation, right? It would happen to you twice. But the idea of saying, you saw what we just went through, you saw how that unfolded in such an unfortunate way. What can we take from that? What's a pearl we can take from that and make your journey just one step easier, one step better, one step more in line with what you hope it would be if you get to make the decisions when you're fully of sound mind and ability to make those wishes come home. I think I worked with, not even worked with, I we had a close friend, this was 10 years ago, where the husband, he was early 50s, was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer. And it was a situation of, who, nothing, nothing was in place, of course, because 50s. And there was so much of no, we got to make sure nothing interferes, no negative energy, all positive, positive, positive. And when it came time towards the end of his life, turns out the cell phone hadn't been paid because he was in charge of paying the bills. And so his wife, who was about to lose her husband, had no cell phone to talk to people, right? There were the things that are happening before somebody's passing away. As somebody's situation in life has declined past their ability to stay up on those things that keep our daily life running, we can find those consequences, and they are still devastating.
And there's still going to be things, right? Like, let's just normalize that where it's no matter what kind of preparation you put into place, there's going to be a curveball, there's going to be something you didn't anticipate. But let's get ahead of the things we can anticipate and making sure that we're having those conversations, that documents are getting drafted, that we know where they are, that we have access to things, we have passwords, that those are organized and able to be handed off to someone else. That you're capturing what's important and documenting those things that are, real treasures that you want to make sure someone understands the value of, whether it's a monetary or finance or family memorabilia, making sure that that's all, as much as you can, documented and captured for people is such an important thing to do. And nobody wants to think about the finality of it all, but no matter your age, gotta do it.
Yeah, I think about the people who will tell me they've inherited photo collections
Oh.
and photo albums. They're like, I don't know who any of these people are. And I wish I had had another day to go through these with mom, and she would have told me, because now not only do I own them and I don't know who these are, but now I feel the burden and the onus of owning them for when, right? Now it's got this weird expiration around of saying, well, I guess I need to own it forever, even though no one's going to come ask for them. But what if somebody did and they say, do you have a picture of a lady who wore a red dress and was standing in front of a Christmas tree? And you're like, aha, you must be that person. Never happens.
Right, it's not going to
But we're
happen.
terrified of eliminating that possibility.
Well, yes. And I think the other thing that I spend a lot of time talking to our senior clients about is if everything's a treasure, then nothing's a treasure, right? So, like, let's really think about, sure, these things maybe meant something to your ancestors and you have shepherded them and taking care of these things for your whole life. That doesn't mean that burden has to be passed to the next generation necessarily, right? Let's let them be free of it. But if there are things that are important for you to impart or for people to understand or to know about collections or artifacts or photos, let's find those things and get them collected in a way that can be shared meaningfully and not when someone's in overwhelm mode and they can't hear about the rings and don't, now I don't remember. And so thinking that through too is important.
I talk to my clients all the time about just because it's memorable doesn't mean it's important. And that's one of those kind of if everything's a treasure, nothing's a treasure guidelines, and saying, I know it reminds you of a time. I know it is part of your past. If this is something that your kids were to discover, what is it that you want them to know, think, or feel about it, and how would you want them to incorporate it in their lives? Because it's really possible that the answer is going to be it's going to sit in a box in the closet. And I want to hear more about what your intentions are and what they need to know if that doesn't feel like the right answer for either of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm wondering if you, as you're talking, having new conversations with people now and saying things like get the passwords, get the accounts in order, get the paperwork in order. Have you found a way to say, start here first? If you've done nothing, at least do this. Start there first. What would you recommend?
What's the one thing to kind of start with? I think that varies for every person and individual, but a couple of critical ones are definitely, is there organization around passwords and access and a list of accounts somewhere? That is one that is just, even if you're not ready to share it with your loved one, do you have it? In a format that is something that can be handed off. And medical wishes and proxy documents, and I would say power of attorney. Those are sort of the three like biggies for me to make sure those things are in place. And that's overwhelming. That's a big overwhelming list, right? So what is one step you can take on one of those documents? And if you're in a position like yours and mine, where we're caring for aging parents, what's the one thing you can maybe start with your parents, and that might be different for each of us. I might start with my dad this holiday and say he might be a little guarded about his finances, so I might go at it with what's the medical proxy situation? Who, if your wife can't take that role, who else have you designated? It's probably me, I'm the oldest, but like. So let's have that conversation. Where is that document? Is it drafted? What are your wishes, even verbally, so that we can understand what kinds of decisions we might want to make? And just starting somewhere, like coming at it and saying, we've got to get all this in order, is too much. So maybe having an agreement of what can we do this month that moves the needle forward and picking one thing. And a lot of those documents can be. You don't necessarily need to engage an attorney. You can find the templates and things for medical proxy documents and things like that and start there. And then once you've kind of started those conversations, now handing it off to an attorney is a little less intimidating because you've given some thought to it, and maybe you're a little less stuck about it.
The giving the thought, I think, for a lot of people is the barrier, right? So sometimes when I talk to people and they're like, "Oh, we haven't done our will yet. We haven't done our this, we haven't done our that because we haven't quite figured out who's going to take the kids. I haven't quite figured out. I trust my oldest, I trust my younger child more than I trust my older, but is that a problem? Like, will they feel betrayed?" Right? There's still heavy decisions, or they've made a decision, but they know it's going to be unpopular and they don't want to share it yet because they think that's going to be the ugly part. So it is the thinking through. There's that resource, the five wishes, which is so wonderful for kind of end of life planning and health planning. From a health point of view, saying, well, what if you face this issue medically? What if you face that issue medically? We always think about like, oh, I don't want to be on life support. Like, okay, well, what if you were in a car accident and it's tomorrow? Is that not right? And they think you're going to be fine. Like, you don't want that, right? We tend to think of it just, what if you have the Hollywood death? And most people's death are not the Hollywood death.
And there's a lot of great resources out there. There's the NOC box, which stands for ne next of kin box, and I bought one and brought it down to my mom's, but it was like a month, 2 months before she passed, and we just never did it together. I was like, I'll help you get your paperwork. We'll organize it so Ed knows where everything is. We never did it, and that's a real simple one to start with. It's a great, self-contained kit and prompts you to kind of look for all those things that are important to have.
That's great. I'll put a link in the show notes for that because I agree with you that that's a great resource. And I think the passwords, I think there are some people out there that do some really nice work with helping people and having tools around what I call digital afterlife planning. Like, where is everything? I keep a robust document that's because I'm kind of in charge of the finances here, right? Which is personal, but then I have a whole other spreadsheet about my business, right? I've got websites, I've got a podcast, I've got contracts, like I have all sorts of things. Does my husband have any idea what should happen if I'm incapacitated or I pass away and my business is a living thing, right? Like, who's going to call my client that I have a phone call with tomorrow and be like, by the way, that's not happening, right? So that notion of doing the thinking about what needs attention and doing the documentation about how it needs to be treated, and then having the conversation and communicating so that access is available. It's like that three-legged stool for having sturdiness in the future.
And none of it's fun, and it's a great thing to do. It's a great way to use a service like ours, because even if it's a little bit of hand holding and guiding and keeping you on track and like helping you figure out what the next step is, it's great, because otherwise, this is the kind of thing that just sits and never really gets finished.
I wanna pivot to the quicksand three, which is the three questions that I ask everyone.
Love it.
And then we'll come back and I'll ha ask you kind of how people can find out more about you and your services. And I know that you're an in-person person. Okay, so we're going to shift to the quicksand three, which are the three questions I ask everyone, aligned with kind of the spirit of surfing the quicksand and helping midlife women get unstuck. So my first question is, what is a trick or technique that you use to help get yourself unstuck and do something you've been avoiding?
Oh, this is such a good question. And I think every guest I've listened to has had really great answers for it. The answer is there's nothing quite like the pressure of procrastinating and sort of having a deadline to kind of push yourself to get something done. I'm a fan of like scheduling an appointment. So like if I've got a project and I'm kind of dragging my feet on it, if I make an appointment with someone for which I'm accountable to get this thing done, then that pushes me, having that deadline pushes me to do it. And I think I've heard this answer before too, but just breaking off, like, what is the one tiny step I can do to move this thing forward?
I think that that's been, I think you're right. I think a lot of people talk about like just what's one step I can take. And I know that when I work with a lot of folks with ADHD and perfectionists, and they're like, if I can't see the whole plan, I can't take a step at all. And it's really like helping re-engineer our brain that way. I'm like, no, but we can take one step. We don't have to know that we're going to climb the whole flight of stairs. Let's do that.
And I would apply that to what we talked about tonight, right? Like, what's the one step you can take with your parents? Like, can you have a conversation over the holidays? Can you pick the five wishes document and send it to them in an email, or find an article that relates and just get the dialogue going? What's one little thing you can do?
Great. Second question, if time and skill and period of history and location and everything were not an issue, what would be a career or job you think you might have liked to try?
Radio DJ, which is actually what I went to college for initially. And then I kind of talked to myself. I went to Emerson College and they have a great college radio station, WERS. And I kind of talked myself out of it freshman year and ended up switching into marketing and advertising, which I also loved. But that would be probably a parallel life for me.
I love it. And then finally, what is a way that you recharge or hit the reset button when life gets really chaotic?
Yeah, that's another good one. Related, I'm probably a big music snob and geek. And so listening to music, going to a live performance, live show, Mike and I go to a lot of concerts. That's just really fun and just kind of escape for a little bit and recharge.
That's great. I used to go to a lot more live shows before I lived where I live now. I lived in Brookline in Coolidge Corner near the Paradise and could walk to the Paradise shows. I would, oh, it's Tuesday, who's playing? Let's go. And it seems like a million miles and a million years away from where I was, but I loved that.
We certainly pat ourselves in the back when we're maybe not the youngest or the oldest people in a crowd, right? We can kind of tell what kind of show we're at based on the crowd dynamics.
Absolutely. Good. Well, thank you for walking through this with me. I know that you mainly work in person, but talk about how if somebody got inspired about our conversation today and they wanted to learn more about either working with you or working with another senior move manager, what might they do?
Yeah, so thank you for asking. And so there's a couple of great associations. Obviously, you mentioned NAPO at the top of the call. You can find a lot of people that work with folks that are downsizing, whether you're moving or not, or you're doing some end of life planning. That's a great place to find an organizer that can work with you. And then there's the NASM, the National Association of Specialty and Senior Move Managers. You can find somebody that does that in your parents' area or your loved one's area. And then we'll do some virtual support as well around move coordinating and things like that, helping find resources. We're always happy to help.
That's great. And one of the things I want to point out about NAPO, and because I know you've been involved with this, is we have colleagues all over the country, and they were like, hey, my client lives in San Diego and they're moving to Boston. Can you be on the receiving end of that work? And I love that we share clients that way and we were able to do that. So if you might be listening and be like, oh, well, I'm not in Boston, so I can't work with Wendy, but maybe my parents are moving in that way, or maybe they know somebody who they've worked with in a different area. They should reach out.
Absolutely.
Good. Wendy, thank you so much for sharing your personal story and your professional expertise with the Surfing the Quicksand audience. I'm thrilled to have had you.
Loved being here. Thank you for being such a great friend who checked in on me all year round. I knew I could lean on you all year, and that speaks volumes. So thank you.
Thank you. I have to be honest, I struggle with the podcast sometimes feeling like every episode feels very heavy, and then I'm gonna lose all my listeners and watchers because they're just gonna say, Kathy, you bummed me out again. But I feel so compelled to bring these important stories and cautionary tales and advice from the people in my life and my colleagues and the experts that I come across, because I do know that something on our mind as midlife women is the stress about the future, is the worry. And I hope that episodes like this one help inspire some new thinking, some new action, some new approaches to dealing with some of the difficult things that are on our plate. And that you also hear about hope and you hear about that normalization that we're all going to struggle. We're not going to get everything right, and we'll deal with the consequences when that happens. I hope Wendy's story touched you and inspired you to maybe start that one thing that can help change some conversations in your family, whether that's about the older folks in your life or just you, because it's work we all need to do. Thanks for tuning in. I'm going to have some great stuff in the show notes, including that knot box that you mentioned, the five wishes that we talked about, and some links to those organizations where you might be able to find resources when it's time for you to start planning for what comes next. Thanks so much.